Right now on SB Nation Radio, we talk about the biggest and latest news involving cars. We call it Let's Talk Wheels.
We saved the best for last. The 67 Shelby Mustang GT500. There she is. There's Eleanor.
With Mike Herzing, here's your host, Matt Perrault.
It is Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing. Good Saturday morning, everybody. How are you? Welcome into another edition of this program. Mr. Herzing, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
How you doing, big guy? Boy, it's a great week and nice and hot.
Yeah, and we've got some really cool things that we're going to talk about coming up this week. We got a new show hitting velocity that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk to the star of that show coming up. We got our automotive reviews. And then in the next segment, our news segment, normally we talk about what's happening. And you got inundated with people asking a pretty similar question.
Yes.
So we thought, why not go to an expert when it comes to overheating, right?
Right. We've got a lot of overheating questions this week, like dozens.
It's that time of the year, right?
Yes.
I mean, we're late summer, it's July, it's the dog days of summer, and
Brutal. Maybe
people aren't doing their due diligence when it comes to their automotives, and maybe they're getting ready for that Labor Day trip, and they want to make sure their vehicles is going to be ready to go. So we will get to that, obviously. And we've got some cool things coming down the pike that we can make an announcement later on in the program about. If you're listening to us on our flagship station, 1560 in Houston, we're actually going to be able to broadcast a local version, a network and local version for Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing. So this is going to become the Let's Talk Wheels radio network coming up next week, which is really neat and really cool. For those of you listening in Houston, you're going to get a chance to get us on the FM dial and the AM dial. So two different spots. You're going to be able to get us on ESPN 97.5 in Houston. So that's a pretty good deal for your home market there, Mr. Herzing.
No kidding. I tell you what. And by the way, a lot of these car questions were from Vegas, in your area.
Oh, really?
Because of the heat. Yeah, I have. Like four of them were all these overheating problems, and the people were in Las Vegas and all around there.
Yeah, it's been a really, in Pahrump, funny. Yeah, very nice. Now, Pahrump is known for some other things, some adult things you can do in Pahrump.
Yes.
It's Saturday morning, so I'll be polite. But it is a very cool town. It also has the only vineyards you can go wine tasting.
Wow.
in Nevada. So that's the only place that I know of that you can go wine tasting. You can do it in Pahrump, Nevada, which is about 45 minutes away from downtown.
Uh-huh.
Las Vegas.
There.
So,
awesome.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. My wife actually works a couple of days and once in a while. She'll work over there. So she's over there. She loves going over there. It's a really, really pretty drive.
At the dentist's office, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay,
as a hygienist, she goes over and helps out there because they have a shortage of hygienists in that area. So
Wow. She'll
go over there and get some work over there from time to time. So
awesome.
we know Pahrump quite well. So we got a lot to come on the program. Welcome in to Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing. Stick around. Much more to come here on SB Nation Radio.
This is Let's Talk Wheels on SB Nation Radio with the car guru himself, Mike Herzing. Here's your host, Matt Perrault.
It is Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing here on SB Nation Radio. This segment being brought to you by our friends at Jeep, the official vehicle of summer. They are ready for whatever your summer brings. Hurry into your nearest Jeep dealer for the clearance event of the summer. And, well, let's talk to Fred Garza here.
Yes.
Fred Garza from Maradine Fans. Mike, we got some great car questions. Normally, we do our question and answer segment at the end of the show, but because these questions are so similar, we thought, well, let's get Fred on the line and let's start going through some of these questions. And Mike and Fred, we start with Gary. He drives a hot shot truck and listens to us every Saturday morning. He drives a 2009 Silverado 2500 diesel. His engine and transmission temperatures run higher under load than they should. Any ideas on extra cooling down his engine?
Wow, what do you think, Fred? I know that we need to add some fans somewhere.
Well, you know, on the diesel trucks, and basically on all cars and trucks after 2005, the engine cooling fan, whether it be electric or be a mechanically, you know, run clutch fan like that guy has,
yes,
is going to, you know, be connected to the ECM of the vehicle. So if you remove it, it'll throw codes. But we don't really want to do it. Those things really do a good job when they're, you know, up at RPM. So really what we want to do is just add some auxiliary cooling on the front of the radiator, between the radiator and the front grill.
Right.
And, you know, there's a variety of sizes, you know, we offer from 6-inch all the way up to 16-inch that they can decide to put in front of that. And then they can either flip a switch or run it off of a relay harness mm-hmm. that'll check the temperature of the coolant in the engine and automatically switch it on and off.
But I think a lot of times if you're pulling a big load like these hotshot guys do, I mean, you've got your radiator, then in front of it is a condenser, and in front of that is the transmission cooler, in front of that mm-hmm. is the power steering cooler. I mean, it's cooler packed on top of cooler, so it may be hard to get some of the air across there. And I think one of your fans on the front pushing in might really help.
Absolutely. And what we call all of that, stacking in front and making it hard to move across it's called static pressure. Ah. And that's what we're trying to get air through. And many times, especially when people are at low speeds, like climbing a hill mm-hmm. or in traffic and they're not going very fast, we're sitting at a red light, that's when that temperature starts to climb, and we want to flip that auxiliary fan on to give more airflow across those cooling coils.
Okay.
We are with Fred Garza from Meridian Fans here on Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing. Normally our Q&A section is at the end, but because of these great questions, we're doing it here at the front of the program. But Kevin has a 2012 Tundra that can't handle the heat when slow off-roading. He has a supercharger, intake, exhaust, and serious engine programming. There isn't room for a bigger radiator, so what should the plan be, guys?
Another pusher fan? What do you think, Fred?
I would, because in a case like that, he's gonna, with all of the turbo and everything stacked in front, he's not gonna have any room
right.
to go with a bigger primary fan. I would definitely get an auxiliary fan, put it in front, and blow it across everything he's got there, and make it as cover as big an area as he can. Most of the fans that we sell, they come with a tie kit,
sure.
or if they're one of the bigger fans, they can usually find a way to fashion some brackets to mount it to the U-channels of the radiator or even the core support.
Well, I know that a lot of these vehicles, you're off-roading, you're not going very fast, and you might even have, heaven forbid, mud on the grill or something like that. So it's all, it's all kind of says overheat. And, a lot of off-roaders, they just, they're rock crawling or something like that. And the engine's working, but you're not really moving. So you really need some more airflow, and I think probably on the transmission, too. And that may be another issue.
I totally agree with you, Mike. And also, too, one of the things that you want to do when you're off-roading and when you get back and you're done, you want to clean off those coils and keep them as clean and as, free of debris to get that air across. So if you're, spraying them with a high-pressure hose, one of the things we like about our Meridian fans is they are IP68 rated, which means they are dust and waterproof. So
right.
you can spray them.
Yeah, some of them you can. And that's what a lot of times the people are on the road, they do a lot of like over-the-road hotshot stuff. Those grills get filthy, and then it won't let the air go through. So that's another thing to have to do. Be sure to clean off, your radiator, the condenser and everything else and all the stuff in front. And that will help your cooling right there.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
All right, we got one more question for Mike and Fred here, and this comes from Ron. He has a 2009 Mitsubishi Lancer. It pretty much overheats every time while he's having the AC on and the car's idling. Now, he lives here in Las Vegas where it's extraordinarily hot. He has a good radiator and the fan works, but he does not have the money to buy a new car right now, and he's very concerned about what his car is doing. So with the AC on and the idling, the overheating issue of a 2009 Mitsubishi Lancer, guys, how do you fix it?
What do you think, Fred? An extra fan or maybe a different fan from the backside? 2009's, a little bit.
Yeah, again, those are going to be controlled off the ECM. I wouldn't remove it, the original fan. I would have them check and make sure that fan is working,
right.
number one, and get an OE
fan,
replacement. But if it is, and I know I've been in Vegas in the middle of the summer before.
Yeah.
I lived in Phoenix. It gets brutally hot. He could not go wrong adding a pusher fan on the front.
Right. And I think that one of my friends here, J.D. Oliver, was just telling me that's a two-speed and those fans, and sometimes the high speed goes out, so it's only running low speed, and that's not going to cool it when you stop.
That's correct, and he really needs to check out, at a service dealer to see if that fan is working correctly.
Mm. That is awesome.
All right, Fred, if you could, if some of these listeners or other people who may have similar questions, where can they find Meridian Fans? Where can they shop for your product if they need it for their cars here in the summertime?
Well, you can go to www.maradyne, M-A-R-A-D-Y-N-E, and then HP.com, and you'll find all of our products there. And then I just ask people to just, once they find one of the products they're interested in, Google it. Just Google the part number, and you'll find a variety of distributors and retailers online and brick and mortar to buy them at.
All right. Hey, very thanks nice. For joining us, Fred.
Fred, thank you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and you guys stay cool out there.
That is Fred Garza from Maradyne Fans joining us here on Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing on SB Nation Radio. And it is an interesting time, Mike, because you know here in the summertime, we've had some funky weather in Vegas over the last couple of weeks, but it's been relatively, I don't say cool, it's been about 95 every day versus 115, like it normally is. It feels cooler, but you know sometimes people just don't realize what's going on with their engines, and you don't want to be stuck on the side of the road in blistering heat.
Yeah, if you're just a little bit low on coolant, you're done. I mean, that's just it. You ought to check your coolant when the engine's cold and actually open up the radiator cap when the engine's cold. Okay, and actually make sure it's full there and then look at the overflow bottle.
Okay.
That's a lot. But, you know, it's tough right now this time of year.
Yeah, it's hot out there. So we'll go back to pick up some more other things. A real quick news and note segment that we can get to here in about a minute or so. But F-150s have lowered gasoline usage. That's kind of an oxymoron, I thought, Mike.
All the trucks are. Yeah, that is kind of strange. But like they were saying, so 60% of the vehicles sold out there are trucks. The number one selling vehicle is the F-150. So if the F-150 gets, instead of, you know, 17 miles a gallon, it gets 20, That's gonna help everywhere, and also the Ram trucks get better fuel economy. They're all getting, most pickup trucks will get 20 miles per gallon now. You know, whether a, you know, the Prius helping with fuel economy, they don't sell very many of them anymore.
Right,
but they sell so many trucks, so when they get better, it'll actually raises. I think we've been traveling 8% more than we ever have, and we're only using about 3 or 4% more fuel. So. It makes a big difference in the U.S.
Yeah, and 5 years ago, F-150s were getting about 16 miles per gallon, where a Prius was getting 46. And now, you're talking about it's 21 miles per gallon.
Right.
The Prius is getting 52. But you're talking about shaving a lot of gas usage there. It's almost an entire gallon per 100 miles, about 17% usage there. So that's really good. And, you know, it's a much higher ratio in saving more gas than when just you put, if you got a Prius, because a Prius was only using 40, you know, it wasn't using much gas anyway. So.
But, you know, they sell 140,000 Priuses every year and 800,000 F-150s. And that's just the F-150s. I think it's probably about 300,000 or 400,000 for the Ram and the Chevrolet, too, and the GM. So we're talking, and they all get better. Everything gets over 20 miles per gallon now. It's awesome.
All right. We are back with a very cool new show, Hitting Velocity. We'll talk to the star of a brand new program that's going to hit on Wednesday, August the 2nd on Velocity Channel. Don't miss this. This is a fun interview. Coming up next, it's Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing right here on SB Nation Radio.
This is Let's Talk Wheels on SB Nation Radio with the car guru himself, Mike Herzing. Here's your host, Matt Perrault.
It is Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing here on SB Nation Radio. This segment of the program being brought to you by our friends at Ram, powered by Ram Trucks, America's longest-lasting pickups, guts, glory, Ram. And, Mike, well, we got a very special guest on the line us today. How about Ralph Hogan, Velocity Channel? Let's talk about this new series, Mike.
Yeah. Hey, Ralph, how you doing, bud?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. Really excited to have to be on your show, and really excited about our premiere coming up soon.
Wow, I mean, I see what you did. Started at 19. You have really started at the bottom, and you're in probably the best place you could start, Southern California. What a car culture.
Yeah, man, you're right. I started watching cars at the age of 19, and I really had, you know, I was tired of being broke and really had a passion for drive and determination and wanting to really change the way I was seen and viewed as, as obviously growing up in a very kind of underprivileged neighborhood. So
sure.
I just kind of set myself to go and just, you know, put it into gear.
So let's talk about the RMD Garage. This is the show that's going to debut on Wednesday, August the 2nd, 9 p.m. Eastern and 9 p.m. Pacific time. How did you get involved with this? How did the show come about? And who kind of had the idea, the genesis of the idea to put this into a actual reality TV show?
You know what? It was that's a great question. I was actually found through YouTube. And I love building cars, you know, and I built a 1956 F-100.
Oh.
We debuted it at the Grand National Roadster Show and took Truck of the Year. And I think it really set the bar high for us as a. And again, this is just as a hobby, and this is something that I'm doing as a passion project. And then obviously, I documented the whole thing. Me being kind of in the marketing world, I wanted to keep that story, and that's how they found me. And then I invited them to my place, and I said, "Hey guys, you're going to be blown away for what we do here." And they came over and knew that we had a great show in hand, and they immediately saw the passion and drive and determination, and obviously the ground, you know, from nothing to this great ability to build some amazing dream builds.
Well, with 45,000 square feet, you got tons of room, 75 employees. Wow, I mean, that is great. I mean, I had my own shop, and I tell you what, I didn't do as good as you. tell you what, Triumph Bonneville, one of my favorite bikes, 55 Bel Air convertibles into a reception desk. Now, tell me about that. You turned a 55 Bel Air convertible into a reception desk for a corporate client.
Yeah, you get these weird phone calls, but I happen to think that you know, here's a 1955 convertible that was really in the worst shape condition that you could have had, pretty much almost what you consider a throwaway. But we get to bring it back to life, and not only that, it'll live as an art piece. And this amazing building, and be used and viewed every day, and a great conversation piece. And it gives me the great pleasure to be able to know that something's going to live that long and have a chance to be alive again and be viewed by many people.
You know, I think it's always interesting to kind of get background, and we kind of touched on it a little bit there as Mike talked about the Southern California culture that you grew up in and how you really got the idea to get into this type of customization for classic cars. And where did the love of this come from?
You know, I think this love came from being, you know, just being around cars as a kid. My brothers obviously had their cars, their share of cars. My other friends had, you know, lowrider cars, things like that. But for me, I was always wanting to do something different. And so I love the Bugattis of the world. I love just a different look, you know, the Ferrari, the Dinos, things like that. And I love the lines on cars. So coming from a car wash, you know, detailing kind of background, I love the fit and finish and being able to do these cars unique. So when I had the opportunity, of course, to build my own, I really wanted to set the bar really high for myself and start building things that I was going to be recognized by.
You know, Ralph, I have a question. When you were young, I mean, very like 6 or 8, 9 years old, did you build the model cars and things like that, or were you more of a sports person, video games? What were you back then?
Yeah, you know what? I built those little cars you would pull out of the box, and yeah. I would pull... You know, I would take a 1964 Impala or a 62 Impala and build them and put the little wire wheels and put them all together. I was that kid that always tried to mess with that. And the other thing that I did is and hopefully the viewers will see, is I've collected and I love bicycles, Schwinn bikes, Schwinn 24-inch since I could remember. So I was disassembling bikes since I was 10 years old, I mean, and trying to rebuild them in different ways, putting Bondo on them and doing things like that.
Okay, what was your first car that you really loved?
The first car I really loved was my 1962 Carmen Ghia, powder blue, laid out to the floor. It was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, there you go. We're talking to Ralph Hogan. RMD Garage is going to, the world premiere is Wednesday, August the 2nd on Velocity, 9 p.m. Eastern and 9 p.m. Pacific. And, you know, Ralph, when someone watches this, and this is obviously the first time it's going to air, as people are going to see this for the first time and come away with an impression, what do you hope the audience takes away from their first viewing of this new show?
You know what, I really hope that they see the teamwork, you know, the camaraderie that goes in. The main thing that's really important to me is that they see our passion. Their passion comes through in everything we do. But the most, you know, we don't forget to have fun. We don't forget to be human. We can't forget the human element that brings all this together. And that's what cars do to all of us. Believe it or not, if you're in a garage at home or if you're in a garage at a shop, that team camaraderie, that's what it's about. I mean, you know, that's at the end of the day, when you're done building and you walk away and look back, that's what you're most proud of. So I really think that I hope that the passion for our dream builds really comes through, and they see how crazy I am and how I took, you know, I'm a high school dropout, and I took my dreams and made it into a reality just by chasing and not stopping.
You know, it's like your own family there of 75. You know, this, when I had my shop, it was the same way. We were all friends and family, and it was just great. And it, you know, you work late hours and you work really hard, but it turns out to be okay and fun.
You know, like they say, you know, look for someone that's willing to pay you to love to do what you love, and that's what it's about for me. And the reason I call it "Don't Dream It, Build It" is really to kind of go after that whatever it is in life that you're chasing. You know, we love dreams. Dreams are amazing. but let's try to make a few of them into reality and bring them to life. And I think that's really what I want to do with any dream build. And not only that, but as I take my life through this journey and open my doors to the world to see what I'm about and what we're about. And you're right, family is the most important thing, and bringing all that together and under one roof. At the end of the day, the guys and all that, that's what it's about. It's that teamwork and that family effect that comes in.
Ralph, when was this series shot, and what did you learn about going through a process like this of shooting a television show?
You know what? It was shot right here in Long Beach, inside our facility, and I learned a lot, to be quite honest with you. It's such a transition. You know, you learn that you got to stand by, and if it doesn't get captured on camera, to the viewer, it doesn't exist. So I like process, you know, and I think the viewers and Velocity love process. So we try to produce as much process as possible, but also you got to keep in mind, we can't make it boring. It's got to be a little engaging. They got to fall in love with characters. They got to fall in love with something that appeals to them. But yeah, we learned a whole bunch. Don't try to hurry, because that doesn't work. You know, the guys want to shoot it, and they need to get it on tape.
You know, sometimes the problems that you come into are the most entertaining part for the.
Absolutely. You try to be real, you know. Hey, you know what? No garage is perfect. Nothing you do is going to go 100%. And that's what makes it real. Is I like to be solution-driven, you know. I like the viewer to go, oh, wow, look at how they solved that. I like that. That gives me an idea if I'm working from home or if I'm doing anything. I think that's super important, is to keep it real. Keep it real, you know. Not everything goes perfect. You could have ordered this and it didn't come in like that. Make the adjustment.
That's interesting. So when you're doing this, or when you guys are going through this, you know, sometimes people watch, you know, Food Network for their ability to watch and say, oh, one day I might be able to make something like that. Do you hope that a viewer who's a car nut would look at you and watch you do it and say, one day I'll be able to want to do what this guy's been able to do?
I think that's the best thing. I think we're all students to everything. If we treat life like that, we're all learning every day. The best thing is, when I built the F-100, winner of truck of the year, I got so many phone calls. First time I put a Coyote motor in one of those, or anybody has. I got a lot of phone calls from all over the world asking me how I did this, how we did that, how you did that. And I love being able to answer those questions, because it lets me know that what we're doing is effective. And what we're doing is also being informative to the next generation of builders that is coming up. You know, we ain't going to do it forever. So we got to make sure we kind of stimulate that creativity in the next generation to be the next chasers of the dreams and builders of the dream builds that we all want and see and we love to see. So, yeah, for sure, information is really important.
Are you ready for the avalanche of people that are going to be calling you, driving up to your shop? There'll be a line around. There'll be like a circus. I tell you what, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're ready, man. You know, we've been prepping. I think my whole life I've been prepping for an opportunity like this, and really to be able to showcase. And again, I want to be not just a guy that came out on a reality show, but I want to be an ambassador too. To fulfilling your dreams and chasing after whatever it is that you're chasing, and you know, don't be the underdog. You know, be the guy that breaks through and doesn't live in that box. So yeah, I'm ready.
Ralph, do us a favor and tell us the story behind transporting the VW bus into the corporate office and using the crane to get it to the building's window.
Hey, you're gonna love that. You know what? I know you guys are all gonna have to stay tuned and watch that. But it was absolutely crazy. You know, we had it obviously take this VW bus that we just built, and it's a beautiful art piece, and take it in through a window that really allowed us just inches from going in. But the best part is, I have done so many crazy things. I once floated, not once, but multiple years floated a car on the Pacific Ocean in Kona, Hawaii. So this, to me, was going to be easy. But nothing's ever easy. You got to make sure you go all through your due diligence and do everything that you can so that it comes out perfect.
This is Let's Talk Wheels on SB Nation Radio with the car guru himself, Mike Herzing. Here's your host, Matt Perrault.
It's Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing here on SB Nation Radio. This segment of the program being brought to you by our great friends at Nissan, the Nissan Titan. You want to go into your local dealer right now. Check out the great deals at NissanUSA.com for sure. And Mike, you and I both driving some vehicles. Let's talk about what you were tooling around with this week.
It was really tough, but I got a Land Rover Range Rover Sport turbo diesel. And boy, I really suffered that this week, you know. Not really. The diesel, I never even realized it was a diesel until I looked at the paperwork. It's so quiet, you would never believe it. Got an 8-speed transmission. It hauls butt. It drives like a gas vehicle, except when you get in it and you look like you say, how many miles, you know, till empty, and it's like 550 miles till empty, and you're getting 29, 30 miles per gallon on the highway. Then you realize it's a diesel. Wow, it's got a 3-liter, 254 horsepower, 443 pound-feet of torque diesel, 8-speed transmission. It's got the stop-start, which I really don't really, you know, stop at the red light, it kills the engine. I hate that. Full-time four-wheel drive, independent rear suspension. It's got all the suspension, air ride and everything. You know, these things, we talk about Jeep, and the Jeep's a great vehicle. Land Rover's unbelievably capable. I mean, they're unbelievable. They have a knob to turn it to any kind of terrain you want. Hill descent. These things will go in crazy amounts of mud. They'll do crazy angles, you know, driving down the side of the freeway or whatever you want. Approach, departure angles, unbelievable. Nobody takes them off-road because the base price is $72,000. And this is not the big fancy one. This is the smaller one. Now, I had some extras on it. Came out to $73,000. This thing is so stable and confident on the road. Now, it's all aluminum body. Okay, they've had that for several years. It is kind of funny things. Seats hug you. They got like 8 or 10-way adjustable seats. And even my wife, Gina, was saying, wow, these seats just grab you. They're so comfortable. You're zipping around a turn. Even if you were off-roading with it, like you're crazy, it just holds you. But they're so comfortable. And, of course, they're air-conditioned, heated, and all that kind of stuff. It has a beautiful, like a light tan, beige interior. It's some dark blue. It was unbelievably gorgeous. You know, it only costs about $1,500 extra for the diesel. There's no way I wouldn't do it, okay? But there are a couple things. It has the nav screen, you know, and all the telematic screen. You put it's touchscreen, everything. It's at kind of an angle on the dash, so when it's really bright sun, it's kind of hard to see it. That's the only rub I have, and also the fact that at $73,645, it does not have remote start.
Wow.
I mean, I'm like, are you kidding me? It has everything else. It'll automatically stop for you. It's got the xenon headlights. It's got, you know, the lights come on for you. It's got all that bird's eye view around cameras. You can push the button and the camera come on in the front, camera rears, left, right. You can control everything. It's very, very high tech, though. You have to sit there and read stuff and learn how to do it. It's not just get in it and drive it. You've got to learn how to turn on the radio and stuff like that. It does have enough knobs where it's okay. It's got all of the, you know, mine had an 850-watt Meridian premium audio system. It had the tow package and all the receivers. It had the big wheels. That 360 parking and heads-up display was awesome. Also, yeah, like I said, you have a heads-up display in the on the windshield. You know how fast you're going and what channel you're on and whatever you kind of want it to say there. I mean, this is an awesome vehicle. It had lane. It had adaptive cruise control all the way down to stop. It had, you know, lane departure. It had every freaking thing you think you might even possibly want. It had it. Okay. I didn't have the seat vibrators, and that's about the only thing I found. It is so nice. I can see why you go over there on Rodeo Drive or anywhere in Southern California where there's tons of money, or even Miami, or even here in Houston, the elite are going to be driving the Land Rovers, and it's awesome. Now, when Jeep gets one of theirs, you know, who knows? It'll be more of a fight when they get a higher-end vehicle. But this thing is really, really nice. And if you want a nice vehicle and you happen to have $73,000, or if you want to lease one, you know, the leasing is not too bad. Check out the Range Rover Sport, HIT. Mine was 5-passenger, but you can get them in 7-passenger. Wow. So they're pretty awesome.
Very nice. I was driving a 2017 Tucson Knight all-wheel drive.
Ooh.
Now, this thing is gorgeous, okay? this is a vehicle that you want to be seen in.
Yeah.
And what I'll say at the top for this vehicle is that they spent a lot of time on the outside of this car, what it looks like. The rims are gorgeous, black-on-black rims.
Yeah.
The entire view, the sunroof, the grille is gorgeous. The color is a Caribbean blue that really, really pops. The interior is black, but the interior is where I got kind of confused on this car because it's $30,000, okay?
Right.
Everything on the car I was driving was standard. So I was really impressed because it has a lot of features that you would see that wouldn't be standard in other cars. But they did an awesome job with driving, all-wheel drive. The engine is responsive and quick. The gas mileage is 25 miles per gallon. I was getting just above that. That's good. I couldn't figure out, though, because I've driven so many Hondas and Kias, I couldn't figure out just from a standard perspective why they decided to go really in a different direction than what Kia is going in from a telematics and from a technology standpoint.
Really?
Because the display is only a 5-inch color touchscreen display.
Okay.
It's tiny.
Yeah.
And it's and it's really small when you're going in reverse and you have the rear backup camera. Mm-hmm. It looks like something that would come out in 2013.
Right.
I mean, it looks like a vehicle that would, when you first started to have rear backup cameras and you first started to have nav screens, that's what the size was. It just was like a tiny little screen. So I was really confused by that. I was also confused a little bit by the interior. It's a cloth interior, but I've seen on standard Kias and Hyundais, I've seen a nicer interior from a comfort standpoint. I've seen vehicles where they've had, just the last one I drove last week was a Kia that had cooled seats and heated seats that were just straight standard. This had heated seats but not cooled seats. Mm-hmm. But that's really my only quirk with this. It is big. One thing that I completely love when it comes to these SUVs slash, you know, crossover vehicles in this way is that the hands-free smart lift gate is awesome. If your hands are free, you're walking through, you slap your foot down and the thing pops open. It's absolutely great when you're right next to the vehicle. That's really nice. It was a vehicle that has all the safety features that you would want come standard, which I think is really an intelligent way of doing this. It becomes the anti-lock brakes, the cross-traffic awareness, the lane divergence, the blind spot detection, cross-traffic, all that stuff that you would want from a safety standpoint is absolutely there. And unfortunately, I actually had to use it because driving in Vegas, you never really know who's around you and what people are going to do around you. So you want to make sure that you're all eyes all the time on the road. But 5-star overall safety rating from Hyundai, what you'd expect. And then you got the warranty, which is just absolutely phenomenal. So if I was going to get this vehicle, I love the look on the outside. I would spend a little more money and I would upgrade the interior.
Sure.
I would go ahead and say, all right, you know, what else can I do? Because I know that Hyundai's and Kia's, I know the Apple CarPlay is available. I know the larger screens are available. So that's my only recommendation, as if you're going to go and get this vehicle, if you can afford it, to bump it up a little bit. But other than that, it has all the features you would want. The back seat's enormous. I couldn't believe how big the back seat was. Big, big sunroof. It doesn't go all the way back, completely opening up or letting your passengers in the back see, but it's pretty large so that they get a pretty good view and a pretty good dose of sun when they're in the back. And the engine, for me, you pop it in sport mode,
yes,
and it goes. I mean, it's not the greatest for gas mileage when you do that, but it's really a fun vehicle to drive around in. And, I mean, this Tucson Knight all-wheel drive, I mean, it's pretty fun, and it's really responsive, and it looks really cool. I mean, when you're driving down the road, you know what you're seeing. People are turning around going, what is that? It's like, oh, okay. It's they have bigger SUVs, obviously,
yeah,
and Hyundai's gone on the larger side of it. They've upped their game with some of these SUVs. But the 2017 Tucson Knight all-wheel drive, it's an all-wheel drive vehicle that gets 25 miles per gallon, and it looks really, really pretty. So good job out of Hyundai for that.
Yes, sir. I think
on
great.
That. All right, so we have a couple of more minutes here to get into some question and answers that we did not get to with our friend Fred Garza, who we really want to thank for coming on. If you missed any part of that, I really would recommend getting it on podcastarena.com because, well, for one thing, it's always fun to hear what experts will tell you about what's happening and what's happening around you. And right now in the summertime, huge problems. But we didn't get to Larry's question, Mike. And Larry's question is, he went to buy a battery for his Mazda, found out that there are different batteries for models with manual transmission versus automatic transmission.
Sure.
What difference does the transmission make on the battery?
Well, a lot of times there'll even be a different battery for a different trim level, because don't forget, the automatic has a lot more computers that control it and things like that. So there's a lot more electronics on it. So that may also drain the battery a little bit. We need a little bit heavier duty battery. Also, the automatic is usually bigger and bulkier than the manual. So there may be a room issue, okay? So that could be how that fits. And, yeah, sometimes they're just a little bit different, but enough to where the battery may not fit. And so getting that stuff – and you know, normally you wouldn't think that. I mean, it's like, hey, a battery's a battery. What the heck?
Mm-hmm.
But, no, there's it's gotten really crazy. And, you know, these things have so much electrical load on them now that especially with an automatic and all the shift computers and things like that and body control modules, it's just – you got to have a different battery.
Hmm. You know, what's interesting, because you answered a question for my step, for my father-in-law.
Sure.
When it came to dead batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something when it comes to batteries that if the car just is totally dead, is there anything you can do to kind of make sure that it just is the battery and not something more serious?
It's tough. You can always, if you have one of those, I have a little jump box that they sell for, you know, $60 or whatever, that this has a small little like computer battery in it. And you go over there and hit the cables, and all of a sudden everything starts to come on. Yeah, or just get a voltmeter and look at the battery if there's any current mm-hmm. across it. Batteries fail after, you know, especially in Vegas or Houston where it's the heat. If you're in a hot area where the temperature's over 95 or so, the life of your battery is cut in half. Okay, so you got to understand. So 3 years, 3.5 years on a car with a lot of electronics, that's going to be it. So it's not like if it's going to fail, it's when it's going to fail. I've had the one on my Explorer. It failed already, and it was a 2015.
Hmm.
So it made it 2.5 years. And so, come on, guys. I mean, I one day it was great, and the next day it was totally dead, just like your father-in-law's. And I was like, are you kidding me? The batteries? And I'm looking at it. It still had some warranty left, but I was like, no. And I went ahead and just got a good, you know, good Interstate battery or something, stuck it in there, and it's great. But you know, it's tough. I mean, batteries just it's so hot under the hood, too.
Well, is that a case where technology has moved faster than the battery technology and we're adding more and more things on? Because I always talk about the fact, like, when we're driving around and, like, I was laughing a couple of weeks ago. I was in a car where I think I was charging my phone. My wife was charging her iPad, and my daughter was in the back seat, and she was what was she plugged into? She was plugged into a game or something. There were like three things drawing off the battery while we were driving down the road, and I was just like, this can't be good for the battery.
Well,
like
that stuff doesn't draw any current and help, but it's, you know, the lights and stopping and starting and things like that. Well, that's why the auto manufacturers are right now working on going to 48-volt system instead of 12-volt system, because the 12-volt batteries just can't handle it. So that's the deal, and it's not, you know, it's coming. 48 volts is coming next few years.
So when that does happen, are they going to make it in the same situation, the same size as a 12 volt, or are you going to have to go and have it refitted if you want to put one of the larger ones into your vehicle?
You won't be able to refit it. It's like your car will become made for 48 volts.
Okay.
You know, but I just think with hybrids and things like that, you just battery issues like that Land Rover I'm driving. Every time you stop, it kills the engine.
I can't stand that.
Put off the brake and it takes off. But think how that does to the battery. How many times and the starter? How many times does a starter, you know, start? You know, instead of starting once and you drive, you know, all the way into town and if you kill it, okay, you use the starter once that day and gone 30 miles. Well, if you're in traffic, that thing might stop 30 times.
Right.
So,
and you can't shut that. You couldn't shut it off.
Yeah, you can. You can shut it off. Almost everyone can shut it off.
Yeah, the Volvos are the ones that every single time you shut the car off, you have to remember to turn it back off, and it drives me. That was driving me crazy. I love Volvos. The only thing I don't like about driving the Volvos is every single one of their new cars has that.
Yes.
And it just,
I know, but it's fuel economy. You know,
sure, but that split second, when you hit the gas and you expect the car to go, and it doesn't, and it just kind of goes, and it clicks on the engine, that to me is scary. It's just, I don't like that. When I hit the gas, I expect the vehicle to go.
Especially if it's an older one, may have an issue and may not start very well. So
right, absolutely. All right, we got a little quick one more two questions to get to before we wrap this week's episode of Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing. Don't move. More to come here on SB Nation Radio.
This is Let's Talk Wheels on SB Nation Radio with the car guru himself, Mike Herzing. Here's your host, Matt Perrault.
It's Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing here on SB Nation Radio. Remember to get the program on podcast arena.com. Go and search Mike Herzing. Go find it, all our past shows, or go to letstalkwheels.com, and it'll take you right to our page for this program. But you had a topic you wanted to end the show with, Mike.
I do, and I just did a vignette on it today. It's airbags and people traveling. I went up to my wake house this weekend, I probably saw 8 or 10, you know, people cruising down the freeway, and the passenger has the seat tilted back, and they got their feet up on the dash, and they're just like napping. Okay, that's very comfortable. Really great. Get a chance to get a little doze, and, you know, doze off a little bit. That's kind of great. If they have an accident, you will shoot out from under the seatbelt, because the seatbelt's made to hold you when you're sitting up. Okay, airbags are made to protect you when you're sitting up. If you're laying down, you're going to shoot out from underneath the seatbelt, and I've seen it in the news that happened through the windshield, just like the old days. Okay, or you're going to be slung forward, and then that lap, the shoulder belt is going to catch you. And what happens is, and I've read the statistics, you end up getting a neck injury that can be fatal. Okay, so think about that.
Huh.
And then the kids, that, especially the young girls, they're all limber and they all do this. They put their feet up on the dash. When the airbag goes off, if you have an accident, it will bend their feet back and it usually dislocates hips or breaks legs. Or think about that. Where are the feet going to go? That's the airbag is right there under their knees, okay? And they've got their feet on the dash, and right, either their calves or their knees is right where the airbag is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to explode and come back. Well, it's going to push their legs back, obviously, and it's going to hurt. But people keep doing it. It makes me crazy. If they knew how dangerous it was, they'd put them in the back seat and let them do that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought because you don't. I totally get the idea with the seatbelt and not being properly there, or you flying up and getting caught on the way as the car is flying through. But the airbag is an interesting thought because I don't think anybody really thinks about that. They're putting their either side airbags or whether it be your front airbags that you could see some serious damage if your feet or body parts are on it.
Yeah, I never even thought about the side airbags. I was just thinking about the front airbag. But you're right. You know, that's going to hurt too.